Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable Panel. Very nice to have you with us. I love talking to everybody.
People say you laugh too much on the
show. I know.
Show.
I know.
They have no sense of humor, that's all.
I know. I got accused yesterday of you saying something serious and me laughing at it.
Yes.
But
I was offended, too.
But I think you were trying to be funny. See, I don't think it was you being serious. I think it was you saying something that was very offhanded, and I chuckled, and I got in trouble.
You got into trouble.
Oh, well.
Well, when you look at this morning's panel, there's nothing to laugh at. I mean, that's for sure. It's, at least looking across at me, Joe, it must be depressing.
Gallows humor
when you laugh and see me in here.
Far from it. Let me get to introducing our panel. First and foremost, we have from the brand new University at Albany, journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. And then political consultant Libby Post is with us.
I'm over here, Joe.
Good morning to both of you. I was just going to realize I hadn't said hello to Rosemary, even though we had talked. And NYPERG's Blair Horner is with us. Very nice to have you here, sir.
Good morning, Joe.
Thank you, Libby.
Rosemary is the name.
Rosemary.
I was waiting. I was giving the drum roll going up to you. I guess I'm not quick enough. You have to be quick on this show.
Yeah. You won't get a word in edgewise if you're not quick.
That's right. Well, we have a lot of topics to get to. We'll get to those. I apologize to the panel. I sent them late last night. So hopefully you got them and read them. Good. I went to go see the show last night called...
What did you see?
I went to go see Legacy over at the Williamstown Theater Festival. It was on the Mako stage. It was with Eric Bogosian, Jessica Hecht, the name completely went out of my head.
Okay.
Justin Long.
Oh.
And it was a really fascinating look at a marriage of a very successful writer who gets a bad review in the Times, starts worrying about his legacy, his wife, who is doing Holocaust... oral histories for Steven Spielberg, also interested in legacy. He's having this crisis that there's nothing I can, I'm getting a bad review, I'm not going to have a legacy. So he wants to have a child, even though they had decided very early on in their marriage that they weren't going to have a child. And then you enter in a grad student, need I say more, and...
and
things get messy. But I just have to say, first of all, Jessica Hecht may be, I think, one of our greatest stage actresses of all time. I love this woman so much, and God, she was good last night. Just amazing. I was reading the review in the New York Times, and it said that Jessica Hecht was in it, and just right after saying, it was nice to see Jessica Hecht, and Ben Brantley put in parentheses, hooray, exclamation point. that's so true. And by the way, I saw Ben Brantley at the show last night. If you're sitting next to, around Ben Brantley or talking to him at intermission, is it okay to say that you don't like the show or you like the show? Or how do you talk to the reviewer from the Times about?
No, you don't talk about that.
No? You don't think
that's
so?
That's like competing with him. I wouldn't. I'd be too inhibited.
To him?
No, to him in a conversation.
Yeah, like saying, I don't like this show.
So what? He still has his own, believe me.
I think a passing comment...
from someone in the audience, even a media person saying, ugh.
Because he was asking.
It's not going to make a difference.
And he knows who I am. He listens to the show around here. So he was asking people, what they thought of the show. And I just thought that was interesting. But then I'm like, I wonder if that will color anything. He had already reviewed the show I was seeing. He was seeing another show.
What did he think?
It's sort of like what we do here.
Yeah, what did he think of that?
We got to wait. All right, let's get to business at hand and talk about all of the great things we have to talk about. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you want to get to talk to us and be a part of our conversation. We would certainly love to have you. Let us begin with the situation in Greece. Europe has given Greece 5 days to avoid bankruptcy. I guess we're now down to 3. Is that correct?
They have to come back by the end of this week.
And to figure out what they're going to do.
Right, with the real plan. They were supposed to come in yesterday, but he showed up and he goes, oops, the dog ate my homework.
Seemed that way.
It did. It was
notes
pretty,
on hotel.
Pretty bold. Pretty bold, yeah. And pretty high from the vote he got. Yeah. And I think that Greece is playing this now you have to deal with us. I think Greece is winning the political battle.
Following a day's worth of talks aimed at finding a way out of months of bitter deadlock, European leaders were scathing in their assessments of Greece's proposals, calling them inadequate and demanding the Greece government return with a detailed plan by Thursday. The leaders of all 28 European Union members will then meet Sunday in what officials said will be the final chance to save Greece from economic oblivion or the moment the country is ejected from the Eurozone.
Right.
Which was supposed to be last week, right?
It was supposed to be, yes, and then they had the referendum was called, and they said, okay, we'll wait until the day after the referendum, and then he showed up and goes, oh, no, I need a little more time. And they said, okay. And now they're rounding up everybody, not just the Eurozone guys, but all the heads of the EU are assembling in Brussels. So this looks like, what are they calling it, Grexit? The exit of Greece?
Yeah, they're going to have to figure something out to keep Greece in.
I think
no
they want to do that.
It.
And I think Greece knows that, and they're playing their hand that way.
Yeah.
I mean, they have, in a sense, nothing to lose, right?
Absolutely.
And under both, at least short-term scenarios of being staying in or getting kicked out, it's still horrible for them.
Yep, yeah.
And so what do they, I mean, why not? They can play the Russian card. They can play the we don't care card.
They can
the
get
European
money
Union.
From U.S. investors who have money to spend.
The only down-the-line problem with this scenario is this is a leftist government. And if they fail, the next election, you will have a fascist government come in to Greece.
That's a good point.
That's something we have to watch out for.
The interesting person that I've been watching is Angela Merkel, she's right in the middle. She's the head. She's the leader of both the EU and of Germany, and there are different goals there. And the Germans do not want to give up anything about releasing or forgiving any of the debt. They want the Greeks to pay, even though, as French and other economists are pointing out, Germany didn't pay after World War II. They didn't pay all their debt.
Right.
But that's the rule. And Germans are ruled. They're saying now, the latest thing is, we're going to stick to the rule. If you borrow money, you have to pay it back, every cent of it. We won't renege on that. But Greece may need humanitarian aid. So what's the difference? What does that look like to the Greeks? It's still getting money, bailout money. So Merkel's got to do that. Or does she want to break up the EU? Would happen if Greece leaves. So.
Are either of these options, I mean, anything that happens is going to happen very quickly. And it doesn't seem, do you disagree with that?
Very quickly? I mean, we've been hearing about, this is imminent. This is going to happen for 2 years now. It's 2 years this has been going on. So I'm not sure that it would be very quickly. What's going to happen quickly is that Greece has no money.
Right. That's
well, that's what I mean.
That's the
well,
issue.
That's what
okay,
I'm
saying.
So then at what point, I mean, something has to be resolved at some point fairly quickly, yes?
I would think so. I think that's where humanitarian aid comes in, though, too. The problem is Greece imports, like, all medicine. There are no drug companies there, and a whole bunch of it's food. So even last week when they shut down the banks and there were no foreign payments really allowed other than, you know, money you might have saved, which I don't think they do. They don't believe in savings. It's already there are shortages everywhere. So that's going to happen way quick, like it's happening. So I don't know.
It's a terrible situation, though. I mean, for 5 years, these guys have been in a terrible economic depression.
Yep.
And the people are really suffering. They just voted to say, no, we don't want to.
Can't do anymore.
We can't agree to the deal that the EU wanted to foist on us, or the Troika, I guess we should call it, right? The EU, the European Central Bank, and the IMF. And so, and the rhetoric's pretty hot. But, you know, again, if you're going to negotiate a deal, that's what you see. You play at the last minute. You don't blink until the last second. I assume the Greeks are playing the Russian card, saying, well, we can always go get some help from those guys. I'm sure Putin would love to cause some mischief down in the Balkans. And so they have some leverage. What little they have some. And I think Rosemary's right that they're going to, at some point, they're going to have to make this decision. But they're going to need the bridge loan, I guess, to get to August, because I guess that's the next time there would be some money available to go to them under the rules of the EU. And if they're going to make their own, bring back their own currency, that's going to take time. The drachma may return.
Yeah.
And that would be months from now.
That's right.
We have to go through the whole system.
And if works, we don't
and
really
if there's
know.
Nothing there to back it up. What's the use
I don't
of
think they're going to worry about that.
Well, I mean, the thing I don't understand is there are countries in the EU, like Britain, that are not part of the Eurozone. And so they seem to be cooking right along. So why is it that the Greeks deciding to go with the drachma over the euro blows up the Eurozone?
There's a financial infrastructure within Britain. And they are part of
Well, Britain's not the only one, though. Swedes, there's some other little countries. Nine countries out of the 28
right,
are not
but they
in the
are
currency.
Still part of the European Union. They're not totally, you know, outside of that. And there is a financial structure within Great Britain, and there's gold, as it were, to back up the pound. They can print all the drachmas they want, but if there's nothing to back it up, then we will go into they'll go into a Great Depression.
They have nothing to lose. That's
worse
why.
than they are now, and so it's the spiral effect of how it will impact.
There's a lot of evidence that taking that drastic route, going to the drachma backed or unbacked, and restructuring within themselves rather than within the EU is better for them. That there'll be more stimulation for local business. They're not competing against the EU, which does. Every country in the EU has more productivity than Greece. It's at the bottom. It can't compete with them. Prices will be unhinged. They would be on their own. They probably would recover from this immediate situation faster. What happens in the long run is another question.
Well, and again, there's enough countries in the EU. I mean, when I was looking at this, Joe, when you sent the article, I decided to see, well, who else? I knew that the Brits didn't have. There's 9 out of the 28 countries in the EU have their own currencies. And when you look at why, it's for all the reasons why the Greeks should
are
want
in trouble.
It. Right? Well, they should have. It gives them flexibility. It allows them to adjust in times of crisis. Even if it is to sort of devalue their currency, the Greeks can't even do that. The only thing they can do is lay people off. And they have staggering
cut pensions. Raise taxes, cut pensions, lay people off. That's they've done all of that to the extent that it's a suffering country. So what's the advantage? Why stay?
That's right.
Yeah.
And if I'm living in Greece and I'm watching the government deal with the situation, and they're showing the guy yesterday making the – because the finance minister's gone. They got the new guy going in. And he's got notes on the backs of envelopes from hotel stationery.
Yeah, I love
walking
that.
In. Well,
and someone took a picture.
It was just like, well,
welcome
God,
to the 21st century.
I'm hoping this is a little bit better plan than this.
And his notes were, don't be bombastic or something like that.
Don't be triumphant.
Don't leave.
Don't crow about the fact that we won the referendum. That's basically what the note was. And so, I mean, again, if this is the way they're negotiating, which is a hard-nosed way to negotiate, that's what you would do.
Well,
right? You would basically say, look, I have nothing to lose. What are you going to offer me?
I think that's true. And we're laughing about it. It is kind of funny. But that is very much the dynamic going on here. There's the big, bad institutional EU and these little gutsy countries fighting them.
This
is not unity.
This guy's from
David
the left.
David and Goliath?
Yeah.
It's
David and Goliath. Yeah.
You know?
The Greeks voted that way. Yeah. I think that's why the vote was 60-30. Yeah. It was not close. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to a letter or two, and then we'll have a news break from the BBC. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMT comes from Subsidium Technologies, a single point of contact for area enterprises to identify telecommunications plans working to maximize information technology efficiency and employee productivity. SubsidiumTech.com. Durant's Party Rentals, 4 locations in the Hudson Valley and Connecticut, proud supporters of WAMC Northeast Public Radio, DurantsParty.com. Barrington Stage Company in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, presenting the musical Man of La Mancha, following the misadventures of delusional Spanish knight Don Quixote, playing through Saturday on the Boyd Quinson main stage, BarringtonStageCO.org. And Spicer Art Conservation, art conservation of textiles, objects, paper, and upholstery, serving private owners and institutions since 1995, treating heirlooms and antiquities, spicerart.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Just a couple letters before we go to another break. First of all, we got this from a listener who says, shouldn't the Puerto Rican economy be talked about more than the Greece economy? I heard 2 days last week on this issue and then nothing. Why isn't Puerto Rico a topic in the news?
Actually, that's a good question. I think it's going to be solved. I think that's a whole less tangled web than Greece, because the U.S. is going to take care of that. What we should be talking about is probably China, and I bet that'll be on the list sometime later this week. Their stock market is in a kind of a free fall right now. There's panic selling, and the government and regulators have stepped in to control that. They've been on a big bubble, sort of as the U.S. was before 2008, and now suddenly there's a realization that we're in trouble and everybody is selling. And in China, 80% of the stocks are owned by, like, little stores and regular people, not big companies and holders. So it's kind of a mess.
I was going to put China on the list, actually, today, and I said I would wait because I just wanted to see. I was looking for a really good kind of comprehensive article on it, which I couldn't find. At this point?
Yes. But our listener is right. There are economic issues all over the world right now that could garner attention.
Mm-hmm. Bill cautions me to use the cough button when I'm laughing over responses or delay them. It becomes frustrating when listeners are listening. Don't change for us. Just be courteous to us. And then there is Matt, who says that the panelists don't laugh enough.
That we can work on.
That's because we're laughing during all the breaks.
And it says, except for Ira. Who will be here tomorrow? Okay. Just saying. Anyway, we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. And I'm glad to know that our laughter gets more mail than the Greek economy. That makes me feel better about our society and culture. Wow. We love hearing from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel, Rosemary Armeo, Blair Horner, Libby Post. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. We move from the situation in Greece to other issues, and we'll try to get to as many as possible in our remaining 30 minutes. And we begin with the CVS Health Corporation, who said on Tuesday that it would resign from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce after revelations that the chamber and its foreign affiliates were undertaking a global lobbying campaign against anti-smoking laws. CVS, which last year stopped selling tobacco products in its stores, said the lobbying activity ran counter to its mission to improve public health. We were surprised to read recent press reports concerning the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's position on tobacco products outside of the United States, said David Palombi, who is a senior vice president at the company. CVS Health's purpose is to help people on their path to better health, and we fundamentally believe tobacco use is in direct conflict with this purpose. The New York Times reported last week that the chamber and its vast network of foreign affiliates had targeted restrictions, often in developing countries, on smoking in public spaces, bans on menthol and slim cigarettes, advertising restrictions, excise tax increases, plain packaging, and graphic warning labels.
Bravo, CVS.
That's right.
Oh, bravo, New York Times, because this issue about the chamber basically running interference for the tobacco companies, or under previous administrations, the U.S. government running interference on behalf of the tobacco companies. The story's been around for a while. Danny Hakem, who wrote the story, was the former bureau chief here in Albany, so he certainly gravitated toward this, sort of horrible ways that tobacco companies operate. They are like a rogue industry. The chamber is behaving unbelievably amorally or immorally. I mean, these are poor countries that tobacco companies are getting their people to smoke. They end up getting emphysema, lung cancer. Those are expensive ways to treat people, diseases to treat people for, and that can have catastrophic consequences for their finances beyond just the lives of the individuals involved.
Put it into perspective for me, because it was the one thing that I had a question after reading the article, which is, how powerful is the U.S. Chamber of Commerce these days?
Well, I mean, it's powerful enough that in the story, the original Times story, there were examples of the chamber arguing basically that they represent the U.S. government in these countries. That you can get, for example, if you join, they have foreign companies joining the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And they say you can get access to the embassy. You can meet with a high-ranking political. They act just like any other lobbying entity, except what they're selling is direct access to the government. So they're powerful enough that they can have an effect the problem they have is they're defending a product that when used as directed addicts and kills, and there's really very few other consumer commodities that are mm-hmm. floating around out there that meet that standard.
You know, it seems like this is taking their marketing that they used to foist upon poor communities in this country, you know,
sure.
and youth in this country, and making smoking sexy and all that sort of stuff, and bringing it to these third world countries where, you know, people just don't have the information they need to know. It's like when we introduced alcohol to Native American communities here in the 16th and 17th century. It's the same sort of thing, and it's all about making a profit. And, you know, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is all about making a profit. And, you know, I think what CVS has done is great. I would like to see all the other drugstore chains follow CVS's lead.
Well, we make that happen if we do more than just applaud them on radio shows and actually go to CVS. Then you will see the other ones.
Most of the time, I only go to CVS.
That will make a difference. Libby goes there.
I really do. I really go to CVS almost, except for my drugs, because it's closer to my doctor.
Well, see, I can only go to CVS, A, because it's the only one in town, and B, right. It's the only one that my health insurance covers. So there you go.
Well, yeah. the hope here is that the contagion here is that some of the other companies that are health-oriented, like Anthem, which is a huge health insurer, also gets religion on this and pulls out of the chamber. Yeah. I mean, if health advocates use this as a tactical advantage, you can
sort of
break up and cause trouble for the chamber. Yeah. I mean, we had the same kind of problems in New York with the Business Council. They did the exact same thing. And one of the ways that you sort of eroded their unified opposition to public health measures was to get the membership of the Business Council to say, that's ridiculous. We can't support legislation that allows people to get sick.
NYPIRG was huge behind
that. Yeah, we were involved in that. I mean, you know, there's a battle. I mean, NYPIRG's been involved in since I started, and I've been involved in since 1985, and I worked at the Cancer Society, right? So I sort of get the science side of this thing. This is a slam dunk in terms of the substance. The problem is the politics are terrible because you have a behemoth industry with nothing to lose taking on the World Health Organization, which is at best sort of diffuse.
So help me out here with the Chamber's statement. It's unfortunate that a concerted misinformation campaign about the U.S. Chamber's position on smoking has resulted in a company leaving our organization. To be clear, the Chamber does not support smoking and wants people to quit. At the same time, we support protecting the intellectual property and trademarks of all legal products in all industries and oppose singling out certain industries for discriminatory treatment. The Chamber, as the New York Times points out, has not said why it has opposed public health steps like restricting smoking in public places, which it called a, quote, extreme measure when it was proposed in Moldova.
And why does it care what happens in Moldova? That's really the question.
Well, I mean, this is what a high-priced a PR campaign will get you. Nice words like that sound very, very correct.
It's a smokescreen, just to use the obvious pun here, right? I mean, what matters is what they do, not what they say. They're just lying in terms of the public relations effort. Maybe they don't want people to smoke. I'm sure none of the heads of the chambers of the businesses in the Chamber of Commerce smoke. Even the tobacco guys probably don't. But they want to sell a product on the market. Altria, Philip Morris International are big players. There's all sorts of horrible things that come out of it. And when asked, I think it was in the Times story, but it might have been another one because I was looking at this. When asked, well, what do you support? They didn't have any position on anything. So what matters is what institutions like this say and what they do, not what they say. And what they said in this was just really a smokescreen. They had to say something, and so they wanted to say something that didn't really mean anything but sounded good.
I love stories where companies are the political actors. CVS here. Last week it was when Walmart said, okay, no more Confederate mm-hmm. products,
yeah.
Confederate flag products. Mm-hmm. That's when everything changes.
Well,
so,
when the corporations
Well,
get
corporations
up and say
are people, so they really can affect
Thank
change.
Thank you, Supreme Court. Yes.
Hillary Rodham Clinton used the first major news interview of a presidential campaign, which is basically why I want to do this story, because I can't believe that she has been in the race for this long, and this is the first major interview she's given. However, she attacked the Republican candidate Jeb Bush for supporting an immigration policy that would not provide a path to citizenship for the 11 million to 12 million immigrants living illegally in the United States. She also criticized the rest of the Republican field for not rejecting more stridently the recent comments by Donald Trump calling illegal Mexican immigrants rapists and criminals.
Well, I, you know, I mean, there's a lot of levels of this. I mean, part of it is, you know, Clinton's doing parades over the 4th of July weekend with people holding rope to keep reporters away from her, and it was filmed, right? So she had to do something to sort of react to that. She had to just spin this back. She was taking a lot of hits, as you just started this off with, Joe, about how she's getting not really been talking to the mainstream media or the large-scale media at any level at all. So she had to react. And I thought the rope thing on the parades was particularly visually compelling where she had to act. On top of it, the Latino vote is going to really matter to some extent, and certainly in a lot of the states in the country. And attacking the Republicans in one of their soft spots, made a lot of political sense. So it's interesting she focused on Jeb Bush.
Jeb, though, I was going to just say, why Jeb, not
Trump?
Rubio or right. Walker? Certainly not Trump, because then she would just look as foolish as he does. But why Bush? Yeah.
Well, she must think he's the only one who can raise $1 billion, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
he's the
that's
one who's
the price
get
of admission.
He's going to end up getting the Walker. Nomination.
Walker can get that, too.
The nomination?
Well, the billion.
The money, which that may be the same thing.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know. Attacking also seems a curious way to begin a campaign, too, or to emphasize in a big appearance like this, too. Voters don't want attacks.
Stuff. The last name was Bush, though, still, too, right? And so there's lots of ways that this has benefits to her in sort of a smart political way and a reactive way to some of the things where they sort of stepped in doo-doo, I thought, in terms of their parades. I mean, I was sort of startled with the ropes. I mean, they had roped off the reporters.
And
the reporters are walking backwards behind a line of ropes as she's walking forward
in
the parade.
Well, the public loves that stuff. I mean, we don't like it treating reporters mean, but the public has no problem with that at all. Yeah. I don't think. I like the way she handled the question about increasing number of poll results show people don't trust you. And she said, look, you know, voters sort that out. We've been hearing this for years now, Bill and I. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah.
She's ready.
She's ready. She knows what to say and how to answer these questions. You know, the whole rope thing was her, you know, staff, and I can understand it to a degree because she's trying to walk in the parade, and to be totally subsumed by the media would make things a little difficult.
Sure.
And you never know what could happen when you have a mob situation like that. Not that the media is a mob, but still there's a lot of people surrounding one person. And so, you know, I think everybody's going to have their opportunities to pick away at Hillary over the next 16 months or whatever long it's going to be. It's going to be a long year and a half. That's all I have to say. But she knows what she's doing, and they know how to run a campaign. They know how to run a well-disciplined campaign. You know, my fear is what's going on with Bernie Sanders and, you know, stirring that up and then having people be disaffected when it comes down to next November. And that's what we have to be careful about.
Well, just a couple things. I mean, I thought the rope thing all by itself, I would agree with you. But in the context of not having talked to the media for the longest time, it was a visual way to describe the way
I
got to
say,
media.
Blair, again, that's a media perception to
yeah.
the public.
Yeah, but the
it's
media
Hillary
game
here, Hillary there every day. We don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care if they get talked to.
If it affects the coverage they get. Are they going to have to deal with the media all the way through the campaign if you alienate them right out of the box?
I wouldn't worry about that. No. This is star time.
Yeah.
Whoever
gets
her
to
will.
Cover her
That's
and
right.
thinks they're going to the White House, this is a big deal. I just read a story about the young woman who's covering it, Hillary, and she's negative. She's very negative about Hillary, and still it's decent coverage, and she loves doing it. No, I don't see that.
So why this particular woman from CNN, do you think? And not something more, let's say, high profile.
Well, it's CNN, and so that's high profile, and it's a woman, which I think she's going to emphasize. You're going to see her talking to women a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see how disciplined the campaign is. As we may recall, 2008 was not so disciplined.
Well,
no, but Now yeah, it's a different story.
No,
now it's. Saying. I'm sorry. It's. It is a very different story. Now we have the Republican clown car with what? What are we up to? Almost 20 people vying.
It won't be 20 in
and,
a year.
No, it won't. 14. But still, you have that. And it used to be that the Republicans that were the one who were so disciplined, you'd never have more than three or four people vying for a nomination. And now we know what's going to happen. Yes, Bernie Sanders will move people over to the left a little bit. She'll go over to the left for the primaries. We'll see how many primaries he actually gets into, you know. But it's going to be a very disciplined, clearly run, professionally run campaign. And, we'll see.
But it's another person from Vermont trying to sort of scramble things. The last one was Howard Dean.
Yeah.
And so we'll see whether or not this Vermont person can actually hold it together past Iowa.
He doesn't seem like a screamer, Bernie. Though. No, don't scream.
He's snoring or something. I don't know.
Right. Hey, look, he's raising some very good issues.
Yeah, there's his name. He is raising good issues, but he's like an old white guy. And
He's not like
one.
He actually is.
From Vermont, who sounds like he just walked out of the Brooklyn Navy Yards, sort of like me. So, yeah.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll get to some letters, and we will take on a couple of other issues as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Brattleboro Retreat, offering specialized trauma, mental health, and addiction treatment for police, fire, military, veterans, EMTs, and corrections personnel, BrattleboroRetreat.org. H. House & Son True Value, Woodstock, New York. Since 1932, a local store featuring hardware, Benjamin Moore paint, and tool and equipment rentals, True Value, behind every project is a true value. HHoused.com. Springfield Museums, presenting an interactive Curious George exhibit and the Summer Spectacular Family Series. With performances, activities, and live animals, springfieldmuseums.org for details. And Sunwood Builders, Amherst, over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits, working to save energy while maintaining design features. Sunwood-builders.com.
About the geography of our panelists, where they hail from. Mm-hmm. It's a large Long Island population.
Yes, all hail from Long Island.
You can tell by the way you say the words Long Island.
A good one from Long Island.
Excuse us.
Got a couple letters I want to get to. Steve writes, Greece has its current crisis because of decades of leftist economics and unsustainable social safety net. They serve as an example of what may well happen in many other countries. Spain and Italy come to mind. If governments and populations don't abandon leftist economic policies, this is the chaos that is spawned by free government stuff and poor work ethic. Kerry writes, wasn't Ireland's economy in bad shape a few years ago and some manufacturing jobs were created by U.S. and U.K. companies, automotive and some high-tech jobs? Why can't this happen in Greece? Once there are jobs, taxes could be taken out to help pay off the debt. I know this would take a few years, but maybe a better long-term plan? I'm having a hard time feeling sorry for a country where people don't pay their taxes.
We just heard from the German Ministry of Finance in those two letters.
David writes, someone just suggested that the UK has money backed by gold. No currency is currently backed by anything except faith that is worth something. This is why we worry about massive money printing. More dollars chasing the same amount of goods and services can lead to inflation. Things are pretty complicated now, so relationships are not so clear and easy. Do a show about money. Something I don't understand, says Chris, is Greece has never had a strong economy and the weaknesses in their tax system and government don't seem to be anything new. Who is dumping money in Greece and why aren't they getting a haircut instead of being made whole for what seem to be poor investment decisions?
Yeah, we talked about this yesterday. The investments have all been Northern Europeans who saw a great opportunity in the mess in Greece and now saying, oh, Greece made a mess.
And now the statistics, the books were being cooked down there
yep.
with a little help from Goldman Sachs, by the way.
Yep.
Not exactly a leftist organization.
And Ken writes, Hillary Rodham Clinton goes rope-a-dope on the media, and Bernie wades into adoring huge crowds without Secret Service protection, mind you. Oh, I think he has Secret Service protection. Oh, don't all candidates have Secret Service protection?
I believe so.
Yes, I think all announced candidates get Secret Service protection, from my understanding. All right, so let's move on to other topics that are making news. This is just one of those stories that I wanted to cover rather quickly, and that is the just because I find it interesting, and that is the subway story with their spokesman Jared Fogel. Subway has suspended their relationship amid a investigation into child pornography. The sandwich chain announced that it had mutually agreed to suspend its relationship with longtime spokesman Jared Fogel. Jared's the guy that lost a lot of weight.
200 pounds.
Eating Subway sandwiches.
Eating turkey subs and walking.
And he has been their spokesman for years.
10 years.
Hours
kept
after
the
investigators.
Weight off.
I was just
yeah,
about
and
to
kept
say
the weight
that.
Off. Right. Fogel, who for more than a decade starred in TV commercials for the company, was not arrested or charged with any crime. Earlier in the day, as media reports showed, authorities interviewing Fogel and removing electronic equipment from his home, Subway said it was shocked about the news. The company added that it believed the investigation was related to the arrest of a former employee of Fogel's foundation. This spring, Russell Taylor, then the executive director of Fogel's charity, was arrested after investigators found more than 400 child pornography videos at his home.
Yikes.
Yeah, the foundation is fights against child obesity. And so the real target appears to be the director, but what is Jared's involvement? And is he a suspect? We don't know.
No, not yet.
But Subway definitely
well, something
doesn't.
Something happened, right? Yeah. I mean, the FBI doesn't show up at your house and take away your electronics unless they think something is going on.
And Subway very early in the day said, we're watching, we're monitoring the situation, we're hoping for the best. We've had a long relationship with this man, and we want to back him as long as we can. And then later in the day, they severed the relationship. So, or suspended the relationship. Mm-hmm. So you do have to wonder what they knew.
At any rate, though, when you go into Subway, are you going to be thinking child porn? That's their fear.
Sure.
Yeah, they'll Which come up I would with say a whole no. new marketing strategy.
And if I were Jared, I'd be eating ice cream at the moment. It's a little tense.
Yeah, it's and I guess it gets into first of all, I know this may be petty, but I mean because the charges, if true, are awful, horrible when you think about child pornography. But this guy has a charity. That house is beautiful. I was like, you make this much money out of being a spokesman for Subway? Really? Is that a thing? I mean, he must have done
I think
pretty
he became
well from
a,
that.
He did. A motivational speaker and all that sort of stuff, too.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. It'll all come out. Either he is or he's not based on what they find on the computers and, you know. And that's that.
Again, though, I mean, it can't be good, right? I mean, the head of the charity has all these terrible allegations against him. I assume if there is any relationship, they have track record of it in terms of the electronics.
Remember Richard Jewell, however, accused in the 1996 Olympic bombing. FBI right. came to his house, pulled out everything, ruined his life. The media was all over it, and he was
right.
completely innocent.
I mean,
so,
that's the one thing everyone should remember is
and
people are innocent until proven guilty.
And they might be going after his electronic equipment because he has records from the foundation.
Exactly.
On his computers. So
or this guy may have worked in his house. We don't know
right.
that
don't
either.
Know.
There's just way
that's
too
right.
much to make.
Although
to
Subway reacted. And so
that's what I said.
It's
they're worried
thing.
About
right.
You know that right. image thing.
Right. The New York Post reports that Fogel also has some skeletons in his closet that should have been a red flag for the sandwich mm-hmm. empire. As an obese student in Indiana University in the late 90s, Fogel ran a very successful pornography rental company out of his bedroom.
Ouch.
His porn collection was vast and extensive, and Fogel took his business pretty seriously, according to this article in the
Great.
New York Post.
There's that media digging up all the dirt.
Okay. Real quick, and I'll go to Blair on this, but the governor, Governor Andrew Cuomo, said on Tuesday that he was preparing to issue an executive order naming the state attorney general as a special prosecutor for police-related civilian deaths. My question is, why now and not sooner after the actual
Well, he had been promising all along that if the legislature did not pass a bill creating a special prosecutor, that he would announce, he would appoint the attorney general. This is how it sort of played out during the session, as a special prosecutor, I believe, by a few days ago. I think by yesterday he was supposed to have done it. And the families then met with him, and I guess they've gone back to the drawing board and exactly how broad the powers would be that the governor would be giving to the attorney general in terms of his investigation. So it was more like, I think the governor, it was sort of like the Moreland Commission thing, where if you don't do reform, I'll appoint my own Moreland Commission. And in this case, the governor said, if you don't pass a bill to deal with these police killings, I will appoint a special prosecutor using my executive power. And I think the hiccup was yesterday where they sort of, it seems to me anyway, it's not an issue I've worked closely on, the families wanted a broader executive action.
Just real quick, so you don't leave here with too many smiles on your faces, we are getting slammed pretty good about the comments about Bernie Sanders. Your snide comments about Bernie have everything to do with his appearance and age, but nothing to do with the issues he is bringing attention to. Shame on you all.
Okay.
And
yeah,
was
like
that
appearance,
Rosemary?
Appearance does not have any effect on how people vote. Yeah, right.
Was that Rosemary who dismissed Bernie as an old white guy?
Yes,
reminds me of a new kid in history class who announced, I don't have to listen to him. He's white. His sister, who'd been in the class long enough to have learned some history, turned to him and said, he isn't white. He's Jewish.
Oh, my God.
There we go. I think that, and then Bonnie says, hearing panel Bernie Sanders speak is a long-awaited breath of political fresh air. He's pulling in respectable numbers at his rallies. What's to say America's had it with the usual fare? So we'll end there. We love your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Rosemary will be back tomorrow. Blair will be here on Friday. Libby will be here on Friday. Rosemary will be here on Friday.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. You have our
there
whole
we
schedule.
Go. Excellent. Right. We'll be back, of course, with more Roundtable right after this.